Welcome to American Dreamland, a place where inequality thrives and cash controls the nation. The state of our country may seem hopeless, but I'm here to tell you the dream's not dead. Hi, I'm TJ Scarlett, and on this episode of American Dreamland, I'm going to be talking about American crime. Who defines it, who perpetrates it, and who gets punished for it. In my last episode, I talked about how the idea of the American dream is a myth. The definition of crime, much like the American dream, is a social construct that is accepted by most people. However, when we break down exactly what crime is, as well as who defines it and who is punished by this definition, we begin to see how the definition of crime focuses on certain groups and actions rather than encompassing all types of illegal and harmful activities. What I mean when I say crime is a social construct is that the definition of crime is constructed by people in our society as well as our culture at large. Something is only a crime because we as a society labeled as such, but what group of people in the United States has the most power to construct our society's definition of crime? Who exactly creates this paradigm that punishes street crime while sometimes barely acknowledging the illegal and destructive actions carried out by corporations or the ultra-rich? The answer lies in the question, because who benefits from defining crime in America as street crime and not crime in companies, business, and the government? Corporations, executives, and politicians. Before I go any further into how we define crime in our society, I'm going to take a step back and describe exactly what street crime and white-collar crime is. A street crime is any sort of violent or criminal offense that happens in a public space. This includes muggings, beatings, sexual assault, vandalism, gang violence, and other things of that nature. This is usually what comes to our minds when we think of crime, because our society has defined crime as these types of transgressions. White-collar crime, on the other hand, is much less well-known and involves wealthy, high-status people in positions of power, such as companies, corporations, or government positions, who participate in things such as embezzling, fraud, tax evasion, money laundering, or ignoring unsafe working conditions for blue-collar workers. These crimes usually involve financial gain or deceit and typically do not involve outright violence or harm. So when we first compare these two types of crimes, it seems reasonable to think of street crime as having a more detrimental effect on ourselves and our community at large. However, when comparing statistics and examining these two types of crimes further, we can see white-collar crime not only costs the U.S. more money, but also causes harm to a greater amount of people than street crime does. In fact, according to a recent study done by the Academy of Psychiatry and Law, not only does white-collar crime have equal or greater effect on mental health as street crime, but the risk of victimization is much higher. Scientists found that not only are you more likely to be the victim of white-collar crime than street crime, but the effects on a victim's mental health and recovery are very similar in each case. And, according to the National Criminal Justice Reference Service, white-collar crime is more costly economically, culturally, and environmentally than street crime. The service emphasizes the fact that not only is white-collar crime not a victimless crime, but it has equal or greater detrimental effects on society than street crime does. So if white-collar crime is as severe as, if not worse than street crime, and happens more often, why do we as a society give greater punishment to street criminals than perpetrators of white-collar crime? Why does our society automatically define crime as these types of transgressions rather than the criminal acts of the rich and powerful? And the reason is because those who commit white-collar crime have money and they have influence, and therefore they have the power to influence society as well as how we define crime, which is street crime. We can also examine the unequal treatment of street crime through the lens of class and race, since street crimes are mostly committed by lower class people of color, and white collar crimes are committed by wealthy and powerful people who are often white. By punishing street crime more heavily than white-collar crime, we are often inherently punishing those who have less money, less privilege, and less power and influence in our society. This social construction of crime and how we define crime in our society isn't just an abstract idea or concept either. This definition of crime affects us all, whether we realize it or not, especially for those people who are not ultra wealthy or who do experience prejudice due to their class, race, or even gender, since poor, non-white men are most likely to be incarcerated in America. Which brings me to my next point, which is what happens to those who are labeled as criminals in our society. The American incarceration system is broken. It is a widely known fact we have the largest amount of prisoners in the entire world. About a quarter of all incarcerated people on Earth are in the United States, and the amount of prisoners in our incarceration system is more than the entire population of New Mexico. Not only do we have the greatest amount of prisoners, but we also have the highest prison rates in the world. These numbers are staggering, and what's more is they're growing steadily, with an enormous rise in incarceration rates since the 1980s, despite crime rates dropping more than a quarter over the past 40 years. And not only do we have the greatest amount of people in our incarceration system, but prisons are a form of punishment rather than any form of rehabilitation or reform. What makes the situation even worse is more than half of our prison population is incarcerated for non-violent drug crimes. This means many violent and dangerous criminals are given lighter sentences or released early because there is not enough room in prisons due to the thousands of people incarcerated for drug use, where sentences have a minimum of 5 years for first-time non-violent drug offenses. This system is absolutely infuriating, and we need to do something to change it. A current example of how drug use plays into our incarceration system is that of the legalization of marijuana. Many young, wealthy entrepreneurs are being praised for starting businesses that distribute and grow the drug as our government and culture becomes more accepting of the substance. However, we still see many people, most of them lower class and many of them black or Hispanic, still rotting in jail with life sentences on their heads for the exact same thing. We need to address this discrimination and unequal treatment of marijuana distribution, because if we don't, we have people wasting their entire lives in prison for something that is now legal. And even if it wasn't legal, does doing drugs really warrant throwing someone's entire life away? Because I don't think so. There's also inequality in the types of people who are incarcerated. Again, we can examine this from an angle of race and even gender. When we look at the case of Santonia Brown, a young black woman who, after being sold into sex slavery, murdered a client in self-defense and was given life in prison, compared to the Stanford rapist who raped an unconscious woman behind a dumpster and spent only 3 months behind bars, it is obvious there is something horribly wrong with our criminal justice system and how we define crime, as well as punish it. Not only is this terrible because of the thousands of people rotting in jail cells for nonviolent offenses, but it also takes an enormous toll on our taxes, with the average annual cost of one prisoner coming out to about $29,000 a year, costing taxpayers almost $70 billion annually. And putting the sheer economic cost aside, these people who make up more than half of the population of our prisons and who have done nothing more than sell or do drugs, oftentimes just marijuana, spend their lives in prisons, while CEOs and the ultra-rich, who commit terrible crimes against our society, are able to go about their lives normally while still exerting an enormous amount of influence and control. The way we define crime in the United States focuses on street crimes and largely ignores the just as important, if not worse, problem of white-collar crime. Since those who commit white-collar crimes are usually the rich and powerful in our society, and those who perpetrate street crimes have much less money and control, we as a society allow white-collar crime to continue while punishing those who commit street crimes with lengthy prison sentences and a broken incarceration system. Not only is there a discrepancy in how we define crime, But those who are targeted by this definition, mainly people of color, men, and the lower class, are given unequal opportunities and are punished more harshly than their upper class counterparts. So if how we define crime in our society is unequal within itself, and this definition is followed by a broken system, how do we strive for balance in our society? How can we redefine our definition of crime, readdress drug laws, and change our incarceration system? The first step is simply recognizing that this is an issue and realizing that how our society is constructed is a social construction and not an objective reality. We need to realize we have the power to change things in our culture and that we are not living in an equal society as long as we ignore wrongful persecution and discriminatory practices. Aside from changing our society's definition of crime, as well as educating the public, we need to address things like drug laws, minimum sentences, and plea deals. While changing our incarceration system to reform and rehabilitate prisoners instead of punishing and victimizing them. There's also the problem of privatized prisons in the United States, where the prison is run like a business and prisoners are treated as a commodity that needs to be kept in stock. This issue goes back to the rich and powerful controlling our society, much like when I talked about the American Dream. Privatization of resources, in this case prisons, allows a small group to control not only a large portion of the economy, but in this case, literal human beings. All of these changes can be made not only through a shift in culture, but through changes in legislation and laws surrounding controlled substances, as well as our judiciary and incarceration systems. Thanks again for tuning in to American Dreamland. Make sure to check back in next week when I'll be talking about colonialism, immigration, and the state's treatment of Native communities. Have a wonderful week, and remember, the dream's not dead. This is DJ Scarlett, signing off.